Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates.
Hello, John. How are you?
Very good, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. I have to say, you are my first guest of the year. Look at that.
Wow. You know what that makes me? The best guest of 2025.
It does.
We can stop there.
I think that sounds like an absolute plan. John, lovely for you to come on. I know we tried to do this at the end of last year and various things got in the way, like going to Miami and other such things. But we'll talk about that in a minute. For those of you that don't know you, John, why don't you do your quick intro and then we'll get cracking?
Yeah, sounds good to me. I'm John Bartman, the co-founder of the Law Tech Consultancy. Came into legal in a kind of a weird way. Actually, I floated a company. I was the chief exec of a personal insolvency company that floated about 14 years ago now. And during that process of floating the company, felt that I just didn't get customer services from my law firm, who were a massive worldwide law firm, and felt that it was a little bit unfair that lawyers at that time have to be multifaceted as individuals. So they have to be, number one, they have to be great lawyers. Number two, they have to be really good at customer services. And number three and four, they have to be really good at new business development and marketing. You know, there's not many other professions that do that. Anyway, this kind of stuck with me. Successfully sold that company, not nearly for enough money that I could retire in any way, shape or form, but enough that I could do a few sort of passion projects. And one of them was, how do you revolutionize law firms? Yeah. And at the time when I first came into that 10 years ago, it was, how do I turn them into better sales and marketing people? Because that's where my passion always was anyway. Started doing some work with Mishcon de Rea that went on for a long time, then helped a number of other law firms, and realized about 6 years ago that the next big disruptor to law firms was going to be tech. 6 years later, this is where we're sat now. And I still believe, exactly as I did then, that the biggest disruptor to law firms is going to be the adoption of tech, and how it can help others grow and do really well.
It's one of those things. Everyone, I think one of our previous guests, we were talking about journeys into law. I mean, my journey into law was random in that sense. I've never practiced law. I've never thought about law. I've never really been a consumer of legal advice necessarily, although I probably could have done with some at various points in my life. But you know, we all come into these sort of these worlds sort of differently, and I think that it's really interesting that you've got all of these different sort of cycles of things. So typically, when you go into the profession, you know you're going to do that because your schooling is set up, your university is set up, and you've got a plan. When you sort of come into the tech world or the business side of law, sort of, it's a job. You don't necessarily set out to go and work for law firms or within the sort of the legal tech space necessarily. What's interesting, I think, that I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen, and some of the partners that you work with are sort of ex-lawyers who have come into tech seeing what you've seen, which is tech is the next sort of big driver, or one of the big next drivers of transformation and sort of driving that sort of future landscape, I guess. So no, it's really interesting how everything sort of comes together.
Yeah, no, totally agree. I mean, we'll come on to this, I'm sure, later, but I still see probably four or five demos every week. And 90% of them start with a founder who says, I was a lawyer and I was working at insert your big law firm, and I saw that there was a problem, so I created something to sort that problem. I mean, that's the genesis of so much legal tech is still coming from exactly as you said, which is, yeah, I was cheesed off at spending an hour doing something, so I created something so I could do it in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And now everyone can.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's really interesting. I think that's that journey, sort of lawyer, associate, partner into tech through frustration, typically. I mean, I've got friends in legal tech companies who have been on that journey. I mean, and so sort of I can't relate to that. I mean, I worked in a law firm. I saw the frustration. I tried to help with the frustration working in sort of centralized IT. But, you know, you're given the cards to deal out rather than part of the future. Cool. So, John, Law Tech Consultancy. So you work with a number of partners and you support them in sort of maturing, scaling. Is it startup to scale up or scale up to big, or is it big to quite unicorn, as they say?
Yeah, look, it's a bit of both. And the way that I see the business is that we actually work for the law firm and the in-house team, and we also work for the solution.
Okay.
So I realized that there is this disconnect within legal tech. And the disconnect is that the ones at the very top, the biggest legal tech solutions, have enormous bank balances behind them, can hire a load of salespeople, have become super aggressive in their outreach. And if you talk to any mid-size or above law firm, they'll tell you they're receiving hundreds of emails every week with, I've got the best legal tech solution, don't you worry. And what that led to and what it still leads to is a lethargy within the marketplace a little bit.
Yes.
So certain solutions don't get their share of voice. The Law Tech Consultancy is working with a number of different partners, actually sort of over 10 now. And the idea is that some of them will be at startup phase, some will be scale up, and some will be into unicorn. It doesn't matter where they are. It matters about what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes super exciting. So if you have a tech, even as a startup, as long as it's doing something exciting, then we want to be having a conversation with you. And ultimately, what we have over the last 5 years is a reputation and a number of law firms, both UK, US, across Europe, and a little bit into the Middle East, a number of people that are interested in looking at legal tech. And then it's really finding what is the right strategy for your tech and what's the right law firm, in-house team, whatever it may be, in order for you to go and speak to.
Yes.
So there's no good in speaking to Clifford Chance if you haven't got a solution that suits Clifford Chance. So
yeah,
it's finding the strategy and then finding the right home for that strategy, and that's where we fit in.
That makes sense. So you're bringing your expertise to the fore in sort of the business expertise, but then layering in your legal expertise of knowledge of the market, knowledge of the tech, your network, what goes on, how that sort of sits up, where that goes. I mean, I think what's really interesting about that is sort of there are a lot of, I guess, there's a lot of consultants out there who profess to be independent and play nicely with everyone. I guess you've come at it at a slightly different angle, which is, no, actually, I'm working with specific partners to achieve specific goals. I'm going to get paid to do it, but we're doing it because I like the brand, I like the technology. It's going to ultimately come into sort of your ambition, your frustration from 14 years ago, which was, how can we make law better? How can we make it better for lawyers? How can we make it better for the consumers, whether they be corporates or people? What does that look like? And I think that's really, really an interesting sort of dynamic. And I think it's nice and open and sort of that's good.
Yeah, look, and I'll throw it back to you, because I think that the most interesting part, obviously, there's been this big rise in the last probably 3 or 4 years of innovation teams and some that are doing great things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always talk about Nadal Shaw Goddard as being one of the forefront of doing that, and Clifford Chance also, you know, really marching forward. What I think is really interesting and is the amount of people in that middle tier that are still looking at things and feeling a little bit left behind. And what can we do? And that, I think, is really interesting because there's loads of tech now. It's not just a big law play. It's what can you do with a mid-sized firm? Where do we need to look? What do we need to do? And that's where we fit in. And I'm sure, well, you know, asking you, those are the kind of people that you really want to work with sometimes because you can give them some balance and you can give them some ideas. And invariably, because they're not as big as some other law firms, they can move a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely. I mean, over the years, so doing 10 years at HighQ, sort of working with sort of the biggest law firms in the world, with some of the smallest law firms in the world, you start to look at sort of the impact that tech could have on business model, what they were trying to achieve. I always remember sort of a relatively small law firm here in the UK, like in the top 150 to 200. And their ambition was to punch with the big guys and leverage tech to achieve that. And so it didn't happen overnight, but they invested in some tech. And I saw the journey of actually now we are punching up against and on the panels and competing against top 20 UK law firms, which is before they weren't, and they were able to leverage the technology to drive that. I think that's one of those sort of business decisions where when you are smaller, when you are more nimble and you can access maybe the same tech or similar tech that the big guys play with, it's sort of how are we creating that competitive advantage for us? And what does that mean for us? Are we going to try and leapfrog 100 firms, or are we just going to try and sort of narrow in and try and win a very specific type of firm or a very specific type of business? And I think that's always, as a vendor, they're always the most rewarding journeys. Everyone loves working with big firms because ultimately they tend to have the biggest transactions, the biggest projects, the biggest purse strings and various other bits and pieces. But ultimately, when you look at some of the smaller firms and some of the more agile firms, as you were saying, they're the ones that sort of you see you are making a real difference. You're not making a sort of 1 or 2% difference. You're making a 5 to 10 to 15% difference. And that as a vendor is really rewarding. Whether that's sort of me here at Autologix or because we've got smaller law firms and bigger law firms on our client roster, or back in the old days where it was HighQ, where we were typically perceived as big law, but actually over the years we sort of branched down. And I think that's the mindset of technology is an enabler. Technology is it's a leveler, ultimately. If you've got the right resource and the right experience, combined with the right expertise, legal knowledge and the like, you can go running with the big boys. You can go and compete and you can go achieve great things. And I think that's the thing that I always like seeing. I always like hearing about conferences. I always stray away from sort of some of the noisier big firm, big investments. I always try and hone in on smaller firms, my high street firms and the like, where they've gone, actually, we've just transformed ourselves just by doing what we should be doing. You know what I mean? And we've thought about it and really sort of focused in. We're not just investing on something because everyone else is. You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think what's really interesting about that is that I'm sure in your beginning of your HighQ days and maybe in your Autologix, I don't know, but there was a price for technology, and that price was, that's the price for technology. It cost this.
Yeah.
And what's happened because of the influx of new solutions and because it's a very competitive market, I'm sure, again, forgive me if I'm wrong, but HighQ didn't have many competitors when you first launched and when you were first out there. Suddenly there are other competitors and people would say, well, instead of it costing £10, they're selling it for £5, which drives the price of HighQ or whoever, it doesn't matter, I'm using HighQ, but what it's meant is that those high street firms can start to afford technology. It isn't it's going to cost you £10, that's it. And they could never afford £10. Now it costs £5 and everyone can afford it. So it's finding where the right fit is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you sort of, you look at sort of the balance of everything, and back in the HiQ days, and I should stop saying using, we'll stop talking about HiQ in a second. But sort of 12 years ago, 13 years ago, when I started at HiQ, like that's when sort of cloud, everyone's talking about moving to the cloud in the last couple of years since COVID and everything else. I mean, a lot of tech was already cloud. It was just sort of overcoming the fear of the cloud and everything else. But the rise of cloud, the rise of mobile, social, the rise of the role of consumerism in terms of how we consume technology, what we've got access to on our mobile phones, all of that has changed the dynamic of how vendors sort of produce their tech, how cheap it is or cheaper it is to produce it, how it's cheaper to host it for a law firm, because you've got so many different options. And I think a whole multitude of factors have sort of started bringing prices down to make them more accessible. I think you touched on a point which was really interesting. I'd love to sort of get a feel for your sort of view on this. There's almost too much choice for law firms now. Now, that we've all got to earn a crumb, and that's fine. But, I mean, literally, if you look at sort of the rise, I mean, legal tech vendors 10 years ago, you'd have probably looked at 150, maybe 200. I think there's probably been 200 in the last 6 months that are brand new, or in the last year, you know what I mean? The rise has been astronomical. Through what we were talking about, lawyers getting sort of frustrated driving through that thing. So if people looking from tangential markets and thinking our tech's applicable to legal now, what can we do? There's a whole rise of stuff. And I think it's a whole combination of things. But I talk about sort of the challenges for law firms buying tech now, because A, there is a lot of choice. And B, that means that there isn't that kind of herd mentality that there used to be, which was you sort of typically, and we saw this at HiQ, but typically you'd win 4 or 5 deals in a particular region, say Bristol or in Germany or in France. And then 4 or 5 more would follow just because the competition has done it. And, you know, that's not happening now. And I think that's really interesting. But from your experience, talking to the law firms, talking to the in-house teams, I mean, the rise of the CLM world for an in-house function, there's hundreds of options. And I think that's really damaging. Well, not damaging, but, hard.
It makes it, by the way, it's great for the buyer. It's not so great for the seller. And when I say it's great, I mean, by the way, when I say it's great for the buyer, it's not always great because, you know, we did a CLM in the Middle East, and they chose 24 to have a look at, you know, and you're like, seriously, 24, you're going to look at them. And the minutiae differences between them are tiny, but there will be differences. But you can pick out now for your pitch list 24 companies to see a demo. And that was from their, by the way, that their long list was even longer. That was their short list was 24. Wow. And arranging demos for 24. But I do think it is better for the buyers, for the law firms and the in-house teams, because you can have comparisons. You can run A-B split testing. You can try one against another. You can try something in that department and then something else in that department. And I do think that that is the way that a lot of this tech, the next 12 months, is more about personalization. And if we think about law firms, especially being independent businesses, you know, a litigation team operates completely differently to an M&A team. And they are a separate business and they're in charge of their own destinies. They have to go out and market themselves. They have to get their own business, have to run it. They run their P&Ls totally separate to M&A, to corporate teams or to the tax team. And I think that we're moving away from, and which I love, by the way, so I'm going to caveat that by saying this at the beginning, which I love, which is, how do I make each one of these departments, these businesses, operate really well, and having individual tech that's going to work completely on its own and very different to that. Now, there does need to be a kind of, there are a few bits of the law firm that will technically work together. So solutions can be the whole of firm. But especially when we're looking at Gen AI, as everyone's talking about Gen AI, and I've been sort of, and we've been.
It's been 19 minutes and we haven't said
it yet. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I bring it up. I think that was the one thing that people said, oh, we've got to get this all as a firm. And that's my point here. I'm not going to lay the point on that. But it's like, actually, no, there are bits of technology that have to fit everything to fit the process that you're trying to do and you're trying to get better at. So is the tech there that is going to make that process easier? Well, that's going to be different for a litigation team than it will be for employment, you know? So,
that's bang on. I mean, our tech process orchestration, we very, 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 very rarely sell to the enterprise because actually, I mean, we could, but that doesn't make any sense. What we try and do is we try and sort of do the classic land and expand. We'll come into one department through usually the innovation team or the knowledge team or the department themselves and go, okay, well, how do we help you? How do we help you become better? What are you trying to solve? Are you replacing an old bit of tech? Are you doing something new? Are you driving towards something different? What does it mean? And then ultimately, what we try and do is we try and do that thing really, really well. And we then get sort of people looking over the wall going, what are you doing in real estate? What's this thing? And so, you know, but that's the thing that sort of back in the day, this was, the high Q thing. It was like, can we sell to the enterprise? How big can the ticket be? What can we do? And people were buying like that. And they were buying multi-year sort of contracts. These days, even for SaaS things, particularly for the generative AI products and tools, I'm hearing that people are buying sort of year-long contracts because they don't want to be tied in because the technology is moving so quickly. Something that you buy today will be out of date in 3 months, or could be, depending on what things look like. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into that. And I think that's why I was referring to sort of the buying experience within the side of a law firm being really challenging, because it's changed and you've got to adapt and you've got to think about, okay, well, what can we be doing? What's the market doing? What's the market outside of legal doing? And what are the influences that sort of drive those kind of decisions? Got a couple of questions for you, because I think we haven't talked specifically about the partners that you work with. But what I want to do is I want to talk maybe 1,000 feet above that. And so obviously you said at the beginning that you sort of your driver is to make law better, make legal better. So you look for technology that does that. But how much does the influence of the founder or the leadership team sort of drive that decision to, I mean, nobody likes working with dicks, quite frankly, but, you know, I'm just curious, what do you look for in a founder, in a leadership team, assuming the technology is the best technology you've ever seen? What are the types of characteristics? What are the things that people can be that draw people like you in?
Yeah. Well, look, number one, I'm going to come straight out and say it, that I look at founders before I even look at the tech. And that makes it really interesting because, lots of them will have visions and various other things of what their tech does. But you've got to look at the founder, and then you've got to look at their constituent, their kind of makeup, how that they're driven, what people, and I meet so many of them as well. So many of them have unrealistic views of what's going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months within their business. And if you are unrealistic and you don't understand that this is a process selling into legal, and they might be selling into other verticals that move quicker than legal, but what you need to find with any leader that we, and I promise you, it's the first thing that we do is we meet all the founders and we spend time with them, is two things. Number one, realism. Number two, that they understand a little bit. They don't understand all of it because that's what I'm there to help them with, but understand what it means to sell into legal. And whether that be in-house teams or law firms, because they do operate in very different ways. Number three, they have to have a really good vision, and a vision that's realistic and not a vision that is ever going to be played back to you 6 months later that was never actually going to happen. They have a good roadmap. And finally, and it's not always essential, this bit, by the way, but it does sort of help, which is they have a good team around them. Because I have, you know, and we still are working with very small teams that are owner, founder, and a development team, for example. Yeah. So that side doesn't quite, if they have a good team around them, it makes a massive difference. So it's all about the founder. It's all about their vision. It's all about their drive, and that their drive isn't unrealistic.
Yeah.
You'll be amazed about how many people I meet that say, we want to be in 40 law firms by the end of the next quarter. And you'll be like, well, how many are you in at the moment? And we're in two. Okay, so you think you're going to get 38 within the next 3 months. You know, that kind of unrealistic attitude is like so damaging, and we'll never end up working with them. But if they want to grow their business and they want to keep it as lean as possible with still making sales and moving forward, growing pipelines, they're the people we want to work with.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think that it's that character thing, isn't it? It's sort of, you look at sort of ideas, ability to execute, all of those things are really important, but actually that comes from sort of a more meaningful, deep set kind of set of characteristics, and that ability to sort of sit in and focus. So I forgot,
you know, it's really interesting because we talked about how I came into this at the beginning, and there is there has to be a slight air of arrogance for a lawyer, because there isn't a lawyer that you meet who's still practicing. You meet some of the ones that have moved out of practice, but the ones that you meet in practice that say, I'm not a very good lawyer. They all sit there saying, I'm a really good lawyer. You know, you're taught to say that, and it's part of your new business pitch. It's part of who you are. And so there is an arrogance. There is this kind of inbred in lawyers of saying, I'm really freaking good at what I do. And sometimes when those lawyers come in and become founders, they bring that arrogance a little bit with them that have been taught over 20 years of being a lawyer, but they have to pay, you know, they have to kind of go back a little bit and say, okay, I'm a brilliant lawyer, but I'm trying to forge my way forward in legal tech, and this is what I'm going to do in order to make
that's the thing. It's a massive thing. Becoming a lawyer is a long, arduous process, and it takes people of different sort of whatever. I mean, I could never be it. I was never clever enough. I could never apply myself long enough to stay in any kind of schooling, let alone do extra schooling just to become a lawyer. But you know, running a small startup, organizing a product function, getting marketing right, getting you go to market right as a small it's tough. It is tough because you sort of, I was talking to somebody about sort of the challenges of lawyers context switching between applications because they've got three or four point solutions throughout a workflow or a process or whatever it might be. And I was thinking, as I was talking about it, I was thinking, I've done like six jobs today. Done a bit of marketing, done a bit of sales, done a little bit of product, some support. I've done some account management and some customer success. So my context switching isn't necessarily in the context of applications. It's business lines. And I'm glad, it's the classic Mr. Ben, like going into a cupboard and coming out wearing my marketing outfit. You know, it's like, you know.
I like the idea of you being Mr. Ben. You've got the name already.
Yeah.
It would make it very much easier for the branding team to run.
I think we've lost a load of our audience, though, because, I mean, Mr. Ben in America won't mean anything. Mr. Ben to anyone under 30 won't mean anything.
So I know.
Just Google it. It's a cartoon from the 80s or even late 70s. That's scary. Anyway, I move on. Mr. Ben. I want to go back to something that was unique about 2024 for me, which was I attended TLTF, Legal Tech Fund Summit in Miami. Unique in the sense that I'd never been to the conference before. I haven't really experienced, I don't think, a conference like it. I know you're associated with them in some way, shape, or form. Talk to me about your experience this year versus other years. What did you see? What did you like? I'll just hand over to you.
Yeah. Oh, look, I've got to be careful where I tread, because I actually took investment from the Legal Tech Fund about 18 months ago. So, you know, you're going to hear the... But I'm going to speak from the heart, because there's nothing wrong with that. The first year that it worked was 2 years ago, and there were 180 people in a room in a hotel in downtown Miami, and it was kind of wild. It was no one had any assumptions. No one knew what was going to happen, and it was a great 3 days of meeting with a really select few people. I mean, 180 people at a conference is tiny, but there were 179 people there that you wanted to have a conversation with. And that was really interesting. So that was great. Then last year, as in not 24, 23, it got a bit bigger. It was 350 people. And it was outside of Miami in Aventura, a suburb of. So it wasn't in downtown. I had more of a resorty feel, but it was the same thing. And there were 349 conversations that you wanted to have, which made it really interesting. And you're in this room together for pretty much 2.5 days. And because we're English, it works out to be 4.5 days, because you do a day either side. This year was even bigger. It was 500 people. And again, in a different suburb in Key Biscayne. And I felt that there were still 499 conversations that I wanted to have. The only hard bit this time is that where you could have 179 conversations in the first year, it was difficult to have the 499 conversations this year. Yeah. I think it is without doubt the most unique of all the legal tech conferences. It is a place where, not that you don't find people at Legal Tech Talk, because I love that as well, by the way, or Legal Geek, because I love that as well. You don't have the kind of conversations you have when you're in Miami. And I think that's because you're there for 3 days. It's a destination. So there's only so much of, you know, hey, Ben, what do? You know, okay, I work for Autologix and I work for the law tech.
Don't act bored when you're talking to me. Come on.
And then, so you end up, what you end up doing is you end up having a whole conversation about life and about stuff and who people are. And I think you kind of get to that level that you don't get at any of these other conferences, even if they are 2 days. You still don't get the real kind of conversations over a beer that, and it's not one beer, because again, you have those at conferences. You have them over 4 or 5 beers over 2 days.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what makes it really different. And I really love it. And there is an equal split there of, they're very careful about not having too many vendors, not having too many law firms, not having too many GCs, and not having too many funders and financial institutions. You kind of got the right mix of everybody. So I love it. And I think it's brilliant. And it will be forever in my calendar. So. Yeah.
It was a great event. For those reasons, I love events generally, because I'm a people person in that sense. I mean, some people don't like me, but I mean, I like people. I like being at conferences. I like seeing old faces, meeting new friends. But it's that, I think that's that sort of that space that we operate in, that we work in. It feels like an open community, but you make friends. You don't just make acquaintances or people that you work with, you make friends, you know. And I think that's a big part of all of these things. But again, for myself and Ben, who attended from our organization, it was one of those things that you sort of, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but it far exceeded what we did expect, if that makes sense. So
are you going to go next year?
100%, if I'm allowed, obviously. So it's sort of, you know, but
I'm going to make sure that maybe I put in a word, you know.
Thanks, John. Thanks.
You in there. It is different. And I think being, again, and I'm going to sound like so, like a moron, but being in the sun during a conference where you can actually utilize that as well makes such a difference to your psyche, to your well-being, to your everything, that you're like, it's December, it's freezing cold in London or wherever, North America, in New York, it's cold and everything. And you're all flying to this destination and, hey, let's go for a walk on the beach. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. So I think you get better decisions from people because they're in a slightly better mood.
Yeah, 100%. Completely agree with you. But I didn't want to just talk about TLTF because you're also associated with ELTA. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm a board member, a proud board member of ELTA.
There we go. Cool.
So,
tell us about ELTA.
Yeah, ELTA, European Legal Tech Association, has been going for a number of years. And we have, I'm going to get this number wrong, but 40 ambassadors across the whole of Europe.
Okay.
A membership of over 5,000 individuals, and that's law firms, in-house teams, others as well. And the idea is building a community of people that can interact with one another in any way, shape, or form for a common goal. And the common goal is legal tech in this instance. So I've been on the board for the last 2 years. There are five of us on the board. I'm the only UK representative of that. And it's a great little association that doesn't quite have the same impact as some of the more international associations, but it's really good at what it does. And what it does is get together people and people who are across the whole of Europe rather than worldwide. So hopefully there's some shared learnings because that's the continent we live in.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
I love it. And we just did ELTACON, which, you know, it was a really nice, again, slightly different to other conferences. Wasn't like huge and massive. It was really targeted. One day in Paris, lots of good people. And I'm very proud of ELTA and what it can become. I mean, it can become bigger and over the course of time it will do.
Yeah, awesome. No, it's good. I think that's the thing. If I didn't do the job I did, I had sort of limitless money. In fact, limitless money. If I had limitless money, I wouldn't be going to legal tech conferences.
I'm just looking forward to that bit. If I had limitless money, I'd go to every legal tech conference.
Yeah. No, but I think the thing that always gets me up in the morning, apart from having to get my kids out of the bloody door, is people. And being around people, learning from people. I do a lot of learning because my base level is quite low. So I do a lot of learning, but I just like listening and engaging with people and just understanding. And conferences for me is always that kind of that happy place because you sort of you're around like-minded people trying to drive towards the same sort of stuff. You might be competitors, you might be partners, you might be sort of prospects, clients, whatever, but actually ultimately you're all there ultimately for a common higher goal, which is to make things a little bit better for people.
I think that's really interesting. One thing that you do become quite judgmental on conferences, however, and when it doesn't happen, you know, you turn up to a conference, and I went to a couple last year where I turned up and it was like, what am I doing here? And then it become really like double damaging because I'm with you. I love going to conferences and it's where I meet people and friends and everything. But it's like, when it doesn't happen as it should do, as in it's a rubbish conference or there aren't the people there or whatever, it's so like double damaging. So it conferences, but they've got to be good conferences.
Yeah, definitely. Question for you as we sort of start to wrap up our little chat is, we haven't really talked about tech, which is great. And I'm hoping, well, it can be, but I'm hoping it isn't the answer. But what are you looking forward to seeing from 2025 in terms of the market, where we are, what we're thinking, sort of how we're seeing stuff? I don't know. It's a broad question, really, because it sort of it means lots of things to different people. But as you are the first guest, you are under and the best guest so far. You're under some pressure.
Number one and the best.
Yeah, exactly.
In 2025 so far, premier.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, it's funny because I looked over some podcasts or the interview actually that was done on me 2 years ago, and I spoke about that there's going to be consolidation. Oh yeah, it's great for the market, and we have consolidation and this. And I think even 12 months ago, I was talking about Gen AI is going to take over the world. What I think I'm really excited about, there's two things. One is boring and functional, but it's going to happen, which is how people are going to utilize current technologies for really bad purposes. I don't know whether you've read the Coming Wave, which is by the Google guy that created DeepMind. And he goes on and on about how it constantly with any technology, you find good things with technology and then someone works out how to use it for bad purposes. Yes. So in 2025, I think, you know, governance, risk and compliance is going to be a huge topic. And I think that as people work out how to utilize technology for bad things, I think that's going to be huge. I think that what I'm really excited about is another two things. Number one, people building new stuff specific for absolute use cases. So this is what we're trying to fill, and it's a universal problem rather than just a top tier law firm problem. This is a problem. We built something and this is it. I'm looking forward to that, and technologies integrating with each other with that too. I'm looking forward to seeing how I can't get away from it. I'm going to say it. How generative AI is going to make an impact into specific parts of in-house as well as law firms.
Yeah.
We're working with a number of amazing tools at the moment that are revolutionizing how law in-house teams take work on and how basically the rest of the company interacts with the legal team. And I think that that's a really interesting part to play. In-house lawyers are often seen as cost centers. Then they're seen as people that are really getting in the way of us all doing business. And I want to see over the next 12 months that legal becomes this thought leader that does stuff for the rest of the team that keeps everyone happy.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Cool. Nice. I mean, I think that last point is sort of, that's a really big one. I think that's where the impact on legal tech, I think, based on what you've just said, will come from the spend and direction of the law firm buyers, the buyer's market, the in-house teams. If they can do more internally, they're going to do less with law firms. Law firms will then have to up their game, change their models, think about what they're doing. That dynamic, that's where tech is going to sort of even the sort of the playing field in that sense. And it already is, to be honest with you. You sort of, there's loads of great corporates out there that you hear sort of leveraging technology in different ways and driving their firms to operate in slightly different ways and off the back of it. So I think that's over the next 5 years, that's going to be a massive, massive direction of travel, I think.
Completely.
What are you... We talked about events earlier. I always sort of end this when with a conversation around when I'm going to see you next kind of thing. But actually, we're going for lunch in a couple of weeks, so it's not
don't
really
tell gonna... anyone that.
Okay, sorry. It's not an open lunch, sorry. So it's just,
You can all come to our lunch. It will be a lot of fun.
Just because I'm paying. Brilliant. Nice, thanks.
Exactly.
What are you looking forward to? Are there any conferences between now? We were just mapping out our conference strategy for the year. What are you looking forward to in the next 3 months? Is there anything?
We did exactly that too. What have we got? I'm going to be over in Dubai in February,
okay.
Which is for a number of round tables that someone else has organized, actually. So that will be interesting because I've always found that region to be very fast moving and has been excellent for us in 2024, so hopefully 25. And then we move into Milan in May for the law.com, the European Legal Technology Awards. There's the British Legal Technology Forum, which is March, which I think I'm going to go to. And then I suppose then you're into Legal Tech Talks. Oh, I'm going to Legal Week. Are you going to Legal Week in New York?
Yeah, I'll be at Legal Week, yeah.
Yeah, good. So I'm going to New York end of March. So that's booked and in. And I do enjoy that one, but in a different way to other conferences.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. John, as insightful as I thought it was going to be, it is the best and only podcast of 2025, but
number one podcast of 2025.
Exactly.
I'm taking that with me. I might get the t-shirt printed.
I'll get that printed for you. I'll bring it to lunch. John, thank you very much, mate. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for taking the time. Looking forward to catching up soon. If you like listeners, if you want to connect with John, find him on LinkedIn. But yeah, John, you're a legend. Have a great weekend.
Brilliant. No, you're brilliant. Thank you so much.
Take it easy, buddy.
Logic is great as well. See you soon.
See you later, mate. Take it easy. Bye.